All right, it is October the 26th, 2024. It is 1:06 p.m. Central Standard Time. I am your host, David Knight, with Project JFK CSI Dallas, and you are tuned in to the Journey Meeting, our monthly meeting of discussing the JFK assassination, the research that all of our guests are, some are experts on, some are novice, and everybody is welcome to our meetings. So I want to say thank you for everybody showing up today. And my co-hosts are Brian Edwards and Casey Quinlan. Brian just got into the room with me, and Casey is doing a prior engagement today, so he won't be able to join us. But hopefully he'll be with us in 2 weeks when we do our next Journey meeting. I want to go ahead and point out... It never fails. Give me just a quick sec. Here we go. For those of you that have joined us or with us today, you know about ProjectJFK.com. But for those of you watching this replay on YouTube, if you've never seen one of our videos, for up-to-date details, information, and what we are about, you can go to projectjfk.com. You can click on several of our tabs at the top, the About Us, the Gallery, the Events, Blogs, Video Store, the Gary Shaw Legacy, and many more. You can also find replays of the Journey Meetings and some of our other videos under the Videos tab or the Events tab. So if you want to watch the replay of things that we're doing, you can go back here to our website, and of course, you can always check the events tab and look for the signups of our up-to-date events that we're going to be having. I'm going to have David Denton come on here before 1:30, I believe, and we're going to be talking about the conference that's going to be happening in Dallas, Texas, November 21st to the 23rd. That's next month. You can sign up. It is almost here, folks. It's 26 days and 1 hour, so... we will be starting that Thursday, the 21st, and we will go until we'll have Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in Dallas. We're also doing a special memorial on the Grassy Knoll. For those of you that realize, the 22nd this year falls on a Friday, the same it did in 1963. Of course, all the videos that I just spoke about, you can find them on the Events tab. And if you wish to scroll down, you can also take us with you as soon as I can get past this long amount. The journey logs, also what we discussed in our meetings, you can always download the journey logs. They are a text file. And to take us with you, you can download MP3s. Now, you can't see our pretty smiling faces, but you can definitely hear our voices and see what or hear what we had to say during the meetings. So, of course, you can check that out. That's where our Spotlight series is. You can check those videos as well. And one last thing about the Project JFK website. If you like what we're doing and you want to support us, click on the projectjfk.com, scroll down on the homepage. You can put your name on the wall, make a donation. It is safe and secure through the PayPal donate button. So if you would like to make a one-time donation or a recurring, whichever you would like to do, this helps keep the lights on and also to pay for the expenditures of keeping our ProjectJFK.com website going and also to help out with future conferences and endeavors. All right. Well, the last time we met was over the summer, and we are now in fall. So things have happened. Obviously, the political landscape is always something in the news. We will kind of gloss over most of that, but we're here to talk about the JFK assassination. Let me call on Mr. Brian Edwards. Brian is here. Brian's done a lot of a few things over the last couple months that he's pretty proud of, and also the book that him and Gary Shaw and Ricky White is selling like hotcakes. So if you have not picked up that copy of the book, make sure that you do, Admitted Assassin. Brian, I'm going to let you take over for a minute, And tell me what you've been up to. Tell the audience what you've been up to and how things are going in your part of the research.
So you probably don't want to hear about my remodeling my kitchen, so that's old news. So
well, we've kind of seen that on Facebook.
That's done. That's done. No, just Gary and I are, you know, still trying to decipher some of the coding in Roscoe's scrapbook. We did find, I think he mentioned this last time, the one of the pictures that Roscoe had put in that scrapbook was what we've now determined was Doris Duke, and we're still trying to trace down some leads about her. And we found, Gary did mention to me that she was briefly associated with or was a member of the OSS in 1940s. We're still trying to figure out the connection between her and Roscoe and or her second husband or her first husband or whatever number it was, that Ruby Rosa. We're trying to figure out the connection between Roscoe's interest in Doris Duke. I did find out that also that Doris Duke was a good friend with Jackie Kennedy after she married Aristotle Onassis. I guess billionaires hang out together, but she was appointed, Jackie appointed, or Doris Duke appointed Jackie to be the president of a restoration, one of her many groups that Doris Duke had sponsored for the restoration of a lot of the northeast part of the country. And Jackie was one of the board members of that. So there is a connection there, but we're still, you know, trying to figure out the connection between Roscoe and Ruby Rosa and Doris Duke. So if anybody has any insight of those three folks, we'd like to have you share that with us. Gary's working on a new book. I can't give you all the details, but he is working on a new book with Jeff Meek, and that should be coming out hopefully in the next 3 or 4 months. What else? That's pretty much it, Dave. We're just trying to get together some presentations for the Dallas group. We're doing presentations at Kappa and Lancer and at our conference. So we're going to be busy hopping between conferences. So that's what we're working on right now.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. There are going to be 4 conferences during that week that we're having ours as well. Obviously, Chris Gallup is having his the day before our conference on that Wednesday. And then Kappa and JFK Lancer is doing their conferences as well. So it's kind of one of those things where you're going to have to make your decision, you know, if you'd like to participate, which one to participate in. Or if you decide that you want to do Zoom, I know I've had a few people that they wind up actually doing Zoom through our conference and the other two, and then they pick and choose who they want to see. So there's another way you can do it if you decide you don't want to show up in person, or if travel is an issue or cost is an issue. But we will be live streaming our conference during that weekend, and I am trying to figure out. It may be a logistical nightmare for me, but you know me, I like to take on shit that, you know, I always seem to make it work out right. I'm looking at trying to do a live stream from the hotel in Dealey Plaza during the remembrance ceremony. If I can make that happen, for those of you that are on Zoom, you can grab some lunch while we're taking that break, and you can also sit down and see what's going on live in Dealey Plaza on the Grassy Knoll area. More details will come with that soon. More details will come with that soon, and it will probably be right up until the time of the conference. I've got to go down and test a few things in Dallas. Obviously, I'm in Kansas, so I won't know if this will work out officially until I actually get there. A few years ago when they did the 50th, I don't know if they put in cell phone jammers down there or what, but getting a cell signal in Dealey Plaza, which, of course, we'd have to be on Zoom telecasting here. Sometimes it's you're lucky if you actually can get a decent signal, and we have to have a certain signal to do Zoom with. So we'll give it a shot, and we'll see if it happens or not. I see that we have Larry Snaff in our audience, also Patrick McCarthy. Yeah, there you are, Larry. What's going on with your part of the world, and also the case at hand of getting the records released?
So, hi everybody. We have oral argument in the Court of Appeals to the Ninth Circuit scheduled for November 13th. That's going to be, we have challenged some of the rulings of the district court when it denied our motion for preliminary injunction, which is getting an order from the court ordering NARA to do certain things. So we have oral argument on the 13th of November. If we're successful, so a couple things could happen in that. First of all, we're actually feeling really good that this was a discretionary appeal, so they didn't have to take it. It was not as of right, and they took it, number one. And then when they take an appeal, they can either do it on the papers or they can do it by oral argument. So we were actually really pleased that this judge, this group of judges, as opposed to our district court judge who never heard oral argument, just took everything on papers. They're going to listen to us, make our argument. So if you live in the San Francisco area, the courtroom is open. So presumably, you can show up on the 13th and you listen to the oral argument. The outcomes could be that the court decides that they uphold the decision of the judge. They could say the judge incorrectly ruled and send it back to the judge for him to reconsider his opinion, or they can actually make a ruling and say that, the judge was wrong and we are granting this request. That's the most immediate thing. The district court is proceeding. The government filed a motion for partial summary judgment on some of the issues. So before we had sought an injunction from the court that was denied, and now the defendants, the government, is now actually asking the judge to make a ruling that would be a final ruling on some of the issues. But that's not going to happen. There's some briefing we have to do, and that decision is not going to be probably done until January or February. So that's on the litigation. As you know, I was an elector for Bobby Kennedy Jr. in New York State. And I've known Bobby for a long time. And so former President Trump had said that if he's reelected, he was going to appoint a commission to release the records. And I wrote Bobby and said that if President Trump wins, I want to be in that committee or that commission. So, and I have ideas about who should be on that commission. So we'll see what happens. First he's got to win, and second he's got to agree to actually follow through on what he said he was going to do, which no one knows for sure that's going to happen. I just wanted to throw that out there for you. Patrick, do you have anything you want to add about the litigation?
No, not at this point. The appeal that's currently set for oral argument on November 13th is an interlocutory appeal, and the odds of such appeals being successful are extremely low, historically as low as, say, a 98% fail rate. However, the fact that it was set for an oral argument in and of itself is good. However, that could also be either postponed or even, obliterated between now and then. We'll see what the court does. They have all the power. And so the good news is that the case is surviving, it's moving forward, that it's registered in the Ninth Circuit, which is the Court of Appeal. And the Ninth Circuit, we are hoping will have an open mind toward any developments that occur in the trial court, which may be adverse to us. It's not the final word in the sense that there is appealability of certain issues, which will also survive the result of the November 13th hearing, if the hearing goes forward. There's a status conference, I believe, in January in the underlying case, and that status conference was postponed as a result of the Ninth Circuit accepting our interlocutory appeal. And it's really quite promising. Overall, I would say, from my point of view personally, the entire landscape of the legal process regarding the JFK Act has been remodeled since our case was filed, and that whereas the person filing a FOIA action with the NARA, the archives, could wait 10 years before hearing anything meaningful, the Act itself is a much, much more powerful tool. And we believe that I personally believe that in the future, the Act could be a powerful tool for future researchers, including researchers who are now just starting out and with some legal acumen. And we also think that there will be future legal experts in the Act as opposed to FOIA. There are several experts famously in the FOIA field, but it's been greatly frustrating, of course, FOIA. And one of the points we're making in our litigation is that the purpose of the JFK Act, one of its purposes, was to solve and address the problems with FOIA, and that therefore it is a remedial act and should be regarded as a remedial act by the courts. So it's had an effect, and it's also had an effect on the media in the sense that whereas previously when a subject of relating to the JFK case generally, but also including document questions, the general mainstream media would immediately say, well, it's a tinfoil hat club again, and start off with that as their opening gambit, whereas now they're saying as their introduction, well, it's been 60 years. What really is there that should be so secret, particularly in view of the official position that Oswald was just a lone nut? Well, if he were just a lone nut, then there shouldn't be, 60 years worth of secrets below that. But of course, the discovery that's occurred since November 63 has shown that Oswald had not only many connections, that is not a lone nut, but also was being followed by the intelligence agencies, and in particular certain elements of the CIA. And of course, Jeff Morley is a leading expert on that topic. In fact, I believe Jeff Morley is currently conducting a seminar on the surveillance, if you will, of Oswald that occurred ever since he decided to defect. Oswald decided after he left them immediately upon leaving the Marine Corps. So Jeff is pursuing that avidly, and I'd recommend his JFK Facts website and his recent new seminar on Oswald. And when I say surveillance of Oswald, I don't mean necessarily eyes on, but it would include, for example, opening mail, which is a very tightly held secret by the CIA, and in particular James Angleton at that time. One of the bottom lines on our lawsuit is this, that during the Warren Commission investigation, it is documented that Angleton's right-hand man stated at a meeting of principals in the CIA that the commission should be waited out. In other words, he said that Jim Angleton says, we should just wait out the commission. And our, one of our points we're making is that 60 years later, we're looking at the same tactic, which is waiting out the critics.
So it's done three times. It's been done with the Warren Commission, with the House Select Assassinations Committee, and with the ARB. So now, you know.
Yeah, always the same. So in other words, we'll just stonewall them until they go away. And that's part of the point of our suit.
So just to clarify what Patrick is saying for the lay people here is that we have this appeal before the lawsuit has been, before the final judgment has been rendered. And even if we lose this time around, because of what Patrick said, this is a very low probability action, but the fact that they're taking oral arguments suggests they're interested in the topic. Even if we lose, we still are going to have a right to appeal at the end of the case when it's all over. So there was really no risk to filing this. The other development that I want to talk about is that Representative Cohen from Tennessee is going to introduce a new JFK bill to amend the existing act. It's unclear if it's going to be introduced after the election and before, you know, the new administration takes over, or if they're going to wait to the second, till after the inauguration. But this bill would essentially recreate the ARB. There's a few things that I'd like to see in it, and they're making some overtures to try to see if those provisions are put into it, but that we may get a new, the point of that would be to get a new ARB to review the process, the records that have not been released, and then obviously to complete any searches that were not done. And I also want to explain to people, remember, that, as Patrick was saying, the JFK Act is a separate statute from the Freedom of Information Act. And in the past, some people tried to use the JFK Act to override, in a FOIA case, some of the exemptions. And you can't use one statute to override the other if you're bringing the action under FOIA. So hopefully we've created a path, depending how this turns out, for people to start suing under the JFK Act. And finally, I had sent a request to the to NARA in the summer asking for all the underlying correspondence in connection with the Biden postponements. Remember, I had done this for the Trump postponements, and when I didn't get my request fulfilled, I then sued the National Archives, and the government settled, and I got thousands of documents which explained what happened during the Trump administration for the postponements. Some of this stuff is really historically important. So I have not received a response since my July letter, and after the election, I do intend to file a lawsuit to try to get the underlying documentation relating to the three Biden postponements, and hopefully we'll get some more information from that as well. So, David, I guess that's where we are in terms of stuff that's going on in the legal stuff.
Okay, Larry. Well, yeah, I mean, like I spoke about before the meeting started, you know, the political landscape that we're in right now, I would say, tumultuous. A lot of turmoil going on back and forth between the two sides. And unfortunately, I mean, yes, campaign promises can be made. Whether they are followed through or not is a whole other story. I think it would be phenomenal if we had the opportunity. I mean, I've only heard one candidate's side stating the fact that they would do anything with the JFK records. And like Larry said, it was former President Trump stating the fact that he would appoint Bobby Kennedy Jr. I think that would be a phenomenal aspect. Whether you I'm not going to quote him, whether you like him or you don't like him, just vote for him. Well, the fact of it is I look at both sides. Are we going to get any further with getting the records released if one party or the other gets in? I mean, hell, it can be a crapshoot. Like I say, I mean, campaign promises are made when former President Trump was in office. you know, there was holdups to getting all the records released. So we've been down this road before, folks. It just depends on whether or not, you know, it could possibly happen. I think with having RFK Jr. connected to this, that would be somewhat of a spur to get out there to, you know, maybe make something happen, maybe hold of accountability to Trump if he gets in. But, again, we won't know anything until November, and then, you know, I really don't see we're going to have an answer November the 5th. I think it'll be well after that before we find out who actually won the damn thing.
David, I just want to add, what we know from my lawsuit against the National Archives is that the National Security Council was the one making the decisions during the Trump administration, the first Trump administration, about what records are to be postponed or not. I suspect that was the same process during the Biden administration. The hope is, for me, the difference between the two campaigns is that the Democrat would probably continue to be very loyal to the National Security Council going forward on this issue, whereas if Bobby was in power, there would be pushback. But put that aside for a second. The other major development that happened in the last couple of weeks is the death of Ethel Kennedy. And there are a lot of records that Bobby Kennedy took from the White House in the hours after President Kennedy was killed that remain unreleased. The ARB was in the process of negotiating the release of those records when the ARB went out of business, and they were negotiating with the Robert F. Kennedy Trust, and nothing happened since then with respect to these records, and a lot of them pertain to Cuba. And the thinking was that so long as Ethel was alive, these records were going to be kept, you know, classified because there could be some embarrassing stuff in there. That's the conventional wisdom. I don't know if it's true or not. So there is a possibility that these records could get released. And again, if Trump wins, I will be reaching out to Bobby to see if he could do something about that. He's not the trustee of that Robert Kennedy Trust. One of his brothers are, but we'll see if we can, because there's stuff there that I think is going to be pertinent to the assassination that has not been released to this point.
Let me ask you, Larry, would that be under a top secret classified type of heading, or what would those documents, what kind of classification for release would that be? I mean, they're classified now.
They would have to be declassified.
Okay.
So they are sequestered. Some of them are at the JFK Library, and others are in the National Archives. They would have to be reviewed. Now, what the ARB was trying to do in 98 was to do a little dance, and they were going to say, we will not call these assassination records if you voluntarily agree to let us review them. And then the ARB went out of business. So these records have not yet been identified as assassination records, although they're suspected to be. And under the definition the ARB took, they should qualify as assassination records. So they're classified right now. They would have to either be declassified by the National Declassification Center in a forward-going process, or this commission would then be able to declassify them on a separate track as part of the JFK Records Act.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I know that that would be definitely a question that, you know, I, as a researcher, would want to know. I mean, how would we get them, and where they would be at? Obviously, they're not kept in anybody's, you know, study or garage or anything like that. We know where they're at. It's just getting them released and being able to view those records is the important part of it.
Right now, the only mechanism to see those would be to file the Freedom of Information Act, and they're going to be determined to be exempt under the Freedom of Information Act because of the national security classification. So the only way to get those released at this point is either to have the National Declassification Center declassify them, which means they have to go from there to the CIA, to whoever has equities in the case, which is a long process, or to have the commission do it. But as a private citizen right now, you know, we have – one of the things we've asked in our lawsuit originally was to have NARA complete the review of these documents that were not part of the batch that were considered in 2017, 2018, and the two times that Biden, they were just out there. They were not part. They were not put into the collection.
They should have
the collection because they were not identified as assassination records because of the negotiations that were going on between the ARB and the Kennedy Trust. But the point is, now that Ethel has passed away, there's going to be less resistance, hopefully, to getting these records released. They were taken by Bobby within hours of the assassination. They really are records of our country, and they should not have been segregated the way they were. But
all right. Well, sounds great, Larry and Patrick. Keep up the good work. Keep up the fight on the legal side, because, hey, that's what you guys do. So we wouldn't be where we're at with that aspect if you guys weren't on the case and beating down the door, so to speak, with the paper trail that you lawyers love to do.
Or beating your head against the wall with sometimes a
problem. Well, yeah. You're beating your head at the door of the wall to get in. So, but great work. Keep that up.
And by the way, just we'll let you know, there's going to be coming a time when this bill was introduced in the Congress, we're going to be unleashing the dogs to have everybody who's interested in this topic write their congressperson to say, please pass this amendment to the JFK Act. So sometime, it might be November, it might be December, it might be January, we're going to be reaching out through JFK Facts, through this group, to contact your congressperson. And I'll repeat again, we're developing a list of congresspeople that have constituents that are interested in this topic. So for the 26 of you who are on this call, if you have not previously provided David with the name of your congressional representative, that means your House of Representatives, not the Senate. If you have not previously provided David with the name of your representative and the district, please do so, because we're compiling a list of representatives. You know, we're somewhere around 60. We'd like to try to get to 100, because that's one-fourth of the House then. We want to try to get a list of all the constituents, all the congresspeople who have constituents for which this is a very important topic to, and then we would target them. So if you haven't done already, please send David the name of your representative. If you don't know who it is, look it up, and your district, the congressional district. So it's going to be like Kansas 6 or something like that, or California 1 or whatever.
And the best way to do that, what Larry's talking about, you can do it right here in the chat log right now, or if you're on Zoom watching this, or if you're on YouTube later watching this, you can always email the information for those of you watching the replay. You can mail that to productjfk@yahoo.com, or if you're live in the chat room, you can put your information in the chat log. Be sure to include your name, email address, your representative and your district. And then Larry, definitely, you can look on the easiest way for you to do it. It's simple. Just go on to the productjfk.com website, click on events and go down to the chat logs. Every single one that gets entered in, that chat log gets put up and all the information is right there. So you can copy and paste it right out of the text document and get the information out there and send out the forms to each individual. So that way they can write their congressman or congresswoman.
So Bill Simpich and Patrick and I are doing, you know, our best on our end, our legal skills. This is what you can do. This is what you as a lay person can do. And the JFK Act was originally passed because Congress got inundated with phone calls and letters. So this is the 21st century, so we're going to try it again in a different way. So this is the way you can play a role in trying to get this mission finished by having Congress, either we're going to get the lawsuit that's going to get it, or we're going to get Congress to change the law to fix some of the flaws. Congress never understood the complexity of the task when they passed the law. They were told it would take 3 years. They had no idea the size of the problem, the difficulties that were going to be accomplished. And they had no idea that, and even in 2017, when Judge Tunheim asked for an extension, he told Congress that in 1 year would be enough to finish the work. So Congress had no idea that the work would not be done by the time the ARB went out of business. And that turned out not to be true. So we are letting Congress know that there is work to be done, and it's you writing your Congress people is what's going to help get this done. So please, if you haven't done it already, please let us know what your congressperson is and your district, so that if it's November, if it's December, if it's January, when we're ready to go, we'll send you everyone an email. We'll give you a form letter to send to your representative, and you can just put your name on it. You can tweak the language if you want, and just send it off to your representative. We'll unleash the dogs. We want to build pressure to get this done.
Awesome. Thank you, Larry. And
back to you.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Real quick, does anybody have any questions that you would like to ask Larry or Patrick? They pretty well nailed out all the information that they have, what they can talk about. I'm still waiting on David Ditton to get into the meeting room, but I'm going to go ahead and touch a little bit of base on this, and as you know, hopefully he gets logged in, then we'll be able to do some more discussion on that. Real quick, I do want to share something. Now, I want to tell you guys, this is in the infancy. It's been in the infancy for a year at least, but I came across something at my public library. Let me just throw it up here on the screen. There is a website called thegreatcourses.com. Now, obviously, the ones that are here, we pretty well have a large understanding of, the JFK case, his presidency, and so on. But this is for the younger generation of researchers. This is a two DVD set and also it's a two DVD set and also a I want to say it's a textbook. It's a small, like 5x7 book. Obviously, if you can get it at the library, you know, you can rent it for free, or you can go to their website and purchase it. And they have more courses than just JFK. So if you guys want to take a look at this, even our seasoned researchers, a lot of great information. But you can get it on instant video or DVD. Michael Sheldon is the person that's basically the teacher, the professor. He's got 12 lectures. You guys can check this out. And then at the end, there's actually a quiz. The answers are in the book, but hey, it doesn't mean to go to the book, back of the book and then, cheat. Give it a good look. There's great reviews of this product. I just got done going through this myself. But if you guys have an opportunity, what I'm bringing this up as is I want to do something like this when it comes to the JFK assassination research. Now, this is more or less on his presidency. There's only like one lecture on the assassination and one on the aftermath. But what I'm looking at doing, and I'm putting this out there, I mean, obviously, Brian, myself, David Ditton, we would be involved as the main people putting this project together and being the professors on this. But that doesn't mean that we don't need help in either coming up with a lecture topic. But this is something that we could basically make, I don't want to say a JFK University, but make it like a course where we're not always going to get the younger generation of researchers to come out to a conference or jump on a journey meeting, but something that we can put in front of them that maybe they can work at their own pace to enlighten themselves and educate themselves, and to have us come on with a lecture series and then, you know, a follow-up book. And whether it's, you know, in person or not in person, but whether it's a hard copy or a digital copy, we have the technology to make, you know, flash drives with the lectures and then a printed book. Or we could do a, digital lecture series with a PDF version. So I'm looking at, putting this together. If you guys have any ideas, if this sparks an interest, of you wanting to help out and you want to throw some ideas at me, I'm all ears. I think we have to do whatever we can on the level of the younger generation to reach them and to teach them. Beverly, I know you're with us today, and I know you do a lot on RFK, but I think you would be one that would have some great ideas for this project. And this is not something we're going to get done in the next 3 months. This is something that will be I'd like to have a lot of it put together by next year. But it's like I say, it's something that I've been going back and forth over after I got a hold of this great courses edition. It really kind of got the wheels turning. And I think that if we hone it correctly, we don't talk over their heads or put too much information, you know, do a 45 minute to an hour lecture. Think of it as a high school class or a junior high class. You know, I think if we put it in that order, and that format, I'm pretty sure that we could get something that could possibly, you know, like I say, something that can reach them on their level. Because let's face it, I mean, getting them to get their asses in the seats in person is kind of hard to do. But something that we could promote into making this a program for them to, obviously would have to guide them, but a program that they could actually work on at their own pace, you know, and of course we would do some type of, you know, certificate or something at the end for those that, you know, turn in the quiz. We could grade it and then, you know, give them feedback and possibly get them to start being, you know, part of our audience, part of our group of what we're doing here, and maybe one day get them to a conference. So like I say, it's in the infancy stage, it's in the planning stage, but ideas are greatly appreciated. If you have, you know, anything you want to share, you can either call me, you can email me. Email would probably be better, because usually I'm always got my nose in a college textbook. So I want to go ahead, and I've got David Denton in the room. We're going to talk about the conference next month, and Dave, go ahead and make sure your mic is unmuted and give us some details.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Okay, good, good. My screen's out. Sorry, I struggled there. My computer didn't have the Zoom app on it, and was just kind of taking me through a series of things, but I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me on, Dave. Yeah, we've got a big event coming up again this November, November 21-24 in Dallas at the DoubleTree, and we're really excited about it. Dave's obviously collaborated a lot with this as well, this central part of all this. And we've got an excellent lineup, and whether you folks that are interested in Zoom or we're still making it live, we're still open for both of those things. We also have one-day passes for people local that want to maybe come in and catch one part of the event. So got a lot of options if you're interested. I think the theme, of what we're trying to do is that this time around is we've just got a lot of, we have a lot of speakers that are going to be presenting some new stuff, new things. It's not going to be the same old, same old. We're particularly focusing on medical evidence, the autopsy, having that big panel with Mike Chester, Dave Manick, and Doug Horn. Horn's also going to be our keynote speaker. He brought some pretty new revelatory information in Kansas City. He's coming back for one more appearance. Speaking of medical evidence, of one of the most underrated researchers that maybe a whole lot of folks don't know about, and collaborated with the Men Who Killed Kennedy series years ago, and has interviewed a ton of witnesses associated with the autopsy. Very knowledgeable person, Rick Russo, is going to be making a presentation on Thursday. We have other things. I mean, I just talked to Larry Rivera, who's got some stuff. He said, I can't really, you know, I think Dave's probably familiar with what he's talking about. He really kind of wants to even keep a lid on what he's going to be talking about until the time thereof. I think it pertains to the Zapruder film. you know, Brian Jones, from who always does a great job in the National Civil Rights Museum, on the Martin Luther King story. He always seems to be updating his information, new things that he's looked at. You know, you mentioned Bev Sadowski's here on, and of course we're excited about her opportunity to speak about the RFK assassination. So we've got a pretty impressive lineup again. Mal Hyman, who's running for Congress in South Carolina. I hope that he's, you know, successful. He'll be coming into Dallas. You know, he's an expert on the media and the JFK assassination, how it was treated. The Project JFK guys always have something new to offer. Casey, Brian, Dave. My focus will be on, as it's always been in the past, some new documents have been declassified, new information I come across. I'll be talking about some new material I've found in respect to Jack Ruby potentially appearing here in Illinois prior to the assassination, and some of the things we've been tracing on that. New stuff on Bill Harvey I came across. Just some different threads that, you know, they're always there, that maybe expand on the story a little bit. That's what we're trying to do and pique people's interest. Dave and I are biased, but we think we always do the best. We run the best conferences out there, and we try to be organized on time and accommodate people, and try to stick to the subject matter of political assassinations of the 1960s. And we look forward to another great conference. We had a tremendous conference last year. We expect the same this coming year. And I certainly invite anyone, everyone that can make it or join us on Zoom, to not hesitate to do so. But thanks, Dave, for letting me on and giving me a chance to plug that a little bit. I don't know if anybody has any questions. I'd be glad to answer them.
Well, yeah, Dave. Hold on just a second before we take questions. You can find out the information. Obviously, we have the Eventbrite tab sign up, so you can get tickets at the ProjectGFK.com events tab. But for more detailed information and the schedule, if you go to JFKhistorical.com and click on the – as soon as it opens up, you'll be able to scroll down. There's our banner for the conference. It's going to be November 21st through the 23rd at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel Market Center. This has got the ticket purchase button, the event details, and also accommodations. There are still – I believe there's still hotel rooms available. They are almost ready to be turned back over to the hotel, so the ones that we haven't sold yet. And then if you sign up later or register for the hotel later, then you will not get the discounted rate that we have. So if there are hotel rooms available and you are wanting to come in person, this weekend would be a great time to sign up for the hotel. You can also click on the Learn More on the Events tab. This is going to give you your schedule. We're going to kick off on Thursday at 2 o'clock. We are going to go until 7 o'clock, so we've got 5 hours on Thursday. There's going to be a meet and greet for Trinday Press from 8:30 to 9:30 in the breakout room. Friday, we're going to start off at 7:50 in the morning. We are going to be going to Dealey Plaza, like I spoke about earlier. We are planning the two-hour time in Dealey Plaza from 11:30 to 1:30. That I'm hoping, like I say, we can telecast live on Zoom for those that are, you know, watching on Zoom. And then we'll go back to the hotel, get back in the conference room, back in our seats, and we'll go until 6:40. On Saturday, we're going to kick off at 8 o'clock in the morning. We will go until 8:15. Doug Horn is our keynote speaker. You are not going to want to miss that medical panel. That is one of my brainchilds this year. After getting Doug Horn to come to Kansas City area and speak at my college, it really spurred him to get back out there and start talking to the young people, and he realized that he had more stuff he wanted to talk about. And I said, well, I think it would be great if we could get a medical panel. I know panels can sometimes run away from themselves, but we do a great job of keeping stuff on track. And everybody that shows up in person or on Zoom, love the camaraderie and having more than just one speaker where we can have a panel of speakers talking. We're going to have, David said, Dr. Michael Chester, Doug Horn, and Dr. David Mantic. So you're not going to want to miss out on the conference this year. We've got a great, great lineup. David Denton, Chris Milligan, Gary Fannin, myself, Ed Tatro, Rick Russo. We're going to have Randy Benson, Shauna Willis, Casey Quinlan, Larry Rivera, Ryan Jones, obviously Doug Horn, Dick Russell, Beverly Sadowski, Congressman Mal Hyman. Hopefully he'll be Congressman Mal Hyman. One of us, Brian Edwards, Judith Baker, and then, that pretty well lines out who we're going to have. So I want to make sure that we put the invite out there. We put these conferences on to, we don't put a conference on to make money. We put a conference on to get everybody together in the research community, whether they're in person or on Zoom. The whole idea of this is to get the information out there. Hopefully we can attract people that have, been with us for years, also attract new researchers. But the fact of getting it together. Now, here's one of the problems we run into, guys. When it comes to a conference, if we don't have people show up and we don't have people, whether they're in person or online, Dave's putting the bill on this. So we got to have people to attend the conference. It's not one of those things where the conference is going on and, well, I'll catch it on a flash drive later on, because that, we come together as a group to, kind of all foot the bill, so to speak, by paying for your ticket price. So we want to continue doing this, and, obviously we don't want Dave going into the, into the hole either. He's taken over the conference. He's doing a hell of a job. I'm honored to be working with him, and I know Brian and Casey are as well, putting his group and our group together, to make a great conference. And also think of it as, I think of it as a product. We want to put something out there that, you guys are going to want to attend. That's why we make sure that we have, quality speakers, things to do in and around the conference. But you got to show up. So whether, the best way to get the full experience is obviously in person. For those of you that can't show up in person, come into, seeing the conference on Zoom. But if you're in person, some of the best times that you'll have at a conference, and I think you can ask anybody that's ever been to one of our events, it's not just the conference, but it's the before, it's the after, and during the entire time the conference is going on. You get a chance to meet and greet with the researchers, the speakers. We have a great time at the bar. Whether you drink or you don't drink, you still have a great time at the bar getting some information from from the speakers and the researchers, and getting a chance to maybe see us in not just the light of standing there behind a podium, but, a little more intimate setting. So I know, Larry, you had a question. Go ahead, Larry.
So there's a potentially important article that has not gotten a lot of coverage, and it really deserves to be vetted. It's about Helen Markham's family. I don't know if anyone has read this article. It's potentially, if the claims in it are true, it potentially is a game changer for the Tippit murder. It appeared in the Garrison magazine in November of 2023. It's 60 pages long. I haven't seen anyone cover this. I know you don't have room in your conference anymore, but you might want to consider having this guy speak before the group, because he's making claims that they need to be vetted. Because if his claims are true, that Markham allegedly was deliberately there to witness the murder, and that Jeff Meeks has actually wrote me about it. What he wrote me is that this guy Gavin McMahon is the author, and he says that the family told him Helen was paid by law enforcement to be the corner at 10th and Patton to witness Lee Harvey Oswald being arrested, that she knew him, that he was in a gang with her sons. There was a nearby stabbing, which is why Tippit was in the area, and that Jack Ruby set up the whole 10th and Patton thing. So if those are true, that's really game-changing. But we need to get someone – we need to get these claims aired and vetted. And unfortunately, you guys already have your program set. I just contacted Kappa to see whether they might have some room for this. But this guy, he's from Australia. I think his claims need to be aired and vetted.
Well, I appreciate the information on that, Larry. I know that I do have the Garrison Magazine from there. For those of you that have not heard of the Garrison Magazine, our friend St. Patrick, it's his brainchild of a magazine about not just the JFK assassination, but he covers other areas of history as well. You can find it at Lulu Press, whether you are looking for a print copy or a PDF copy. You can get those at lulupress.com. You can type in Midnight Rider News or St. Patrick, or type in Garrison.
You read what?
I have not. I have seen the article. I've not read the article yet. I will say one person that would be great for doing some vetting on that. Our friend Brian Edwards here. Brian, I know your camera's off, but hopefully you're still within the sound of my voice.
Well, we have someone on the chat, Kappa USA, I don't know who that is, says they can elaborate on that story. So maybe they could speak.
Actually, that would be David Denton. Dave, your mic's on mute. Go ahead and unmute your mic.
You're still muted.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Okay, yeah. I've had multiple conversations with Gavin McMahon through the whole process of him writing that article. In fact, I'm the one that basically convinced him to publish it in the Garrison Magazine. And, the detail's all there. What I know about Gavin McMahon is he's obviously from Australia. He was a former police investigator, private eye type person. It was all as bona fides, I can't explain, but he seems like a very legitimate guy in terms of investigation. He took a lot of his information from the daughter-in-law, who's still alive, of Helen Markham. And that's where his primary sources were. And it's a revelatory story. It tells a different story about Oswald maybe trying to penetrate local gangs and involved with his son or Markham's son in some activities prior to the assassination. His storyline seems a little bit different about what happened to Tippit, that Oswald might have been involved with the shooting of Tippit, and yet, Larry's right. If it's true, it's something that really is a game changer, and like anything else, it needs to be vetted. I agree. I'm not sure with Gavin about. He's in Australia. Obviously, anything he'd do would probably have to be via Zoom.
Right, right. It'd be interesting to get someone who's like an experienced. So I would think if you get someone that really knows the Tippit murder, to get them on a panel with Gavin to try to vet this, because, this could change that story. And the Tippit murder, that was put up there by the Warren Commission as to show that Oswald – had a propensity for violence. Now, the Walker shooter was there to show the plan, allegedly. But if this is different, maybe McBride. Maybe McBride, maybe you get McBride to be on a panel, Zoom panel with this guy. But this, Jeff Meek pointed this out to me. Jeff Meek is a really, real, well-respected writer. So I think it's a topic that's worth vetting somewhere. I know you don't have room in your program. Maybe we have a special Zoom session, or something.
And we'll look into that. I mean, you're right. Our schedule is tight. But, I do have a pretty good back and forth with Gavin. I'm friends with him on Facebook. We message a lot. I mean, it's be a question of time. But Larry, I agree. His story is significant. I mean, in terms of what it, you know, gives a different narrative to, again, though, in some respects, I mean, it's pretty obvious that, you know, Markham wasn't telling the truth. I think his belief is that Markham wasn't telling the truth because there were people out there that were threatening her from the get-go, that you know, she didn't come out with the truth about what she really knew about Oswald and what happened with Pippin.
Well, this gives a different slant as to why we know that. So the conventional thinking is that she was such a weak witness that if there had been a trial, she would have, any attorney would have, she would have crumbled on the cross-examination. But aside from her factual observations, if she has a different relationship with what happened, that is even further, it further taints her story. So she was the key witness from the Warren Commission. They ignored all her, you know, all her inconsistencies and her, you know, problems. And she was the key person that they said that they used to say that Oswald was the one that she saw shoot Tibbet. So anyway, it's probably worth 20-30 minutes. You don't have that, probably don't have that time. So I'm just thinking maybe, David, maybe we try to get a special Zoom program with him.
Yeah, I think that would be a great idea if we can, if he's down in Australia, we can figure out the time constraints. Because obviously it's day here when it's night there, so maybe we can figure out something in between where we can, get a hold of him. Brian, I just emailed you that link, so that way you can read through it if you haven't already done that. I know Brian's done a lot of research on the Tippet murder. So, if we could get like a panel going of Dave, Brian, Joe McBride, and what did you say his name was?
Gavin McMahon.
Gavin McMahon. We get him involved. Maybe we can have a special event just of that. It'll obviously be after the conference, but maybe we can do it just maybe the week after Thanksgiving.
I think that's a good idea.
You could keep it at your conference and say, you know, we didn't have time, but I mean, I have not read the article. I haven't seen it. I just, Jeff Meeks told me the guts of it. And by the way, I don't know, did you announce, David, that Jeff Meeks is taking the Rob Reiner podcast? That's going to be a book.
No, I didn't know that actually. He's going to take the Who Killed JFK podcast and make it into a book.
So Dick Russell is writing that. So it's sort of like the it's going to be the background, the you know, it's going to give all the supporting documentation and stuff. So Dick Russell has got a major publisher. That's going to be coming out in the spring.
Oh, hell yeah. That's a great, that's great. That's great news. I enjoyed the podcast. The bad part about it is, I mean, it's a podcast without, you know, you want a companion piece to go along with it. That sounds like a great thing. I know Dick will be there in
conference, right?
Dick Russell's going to be in at the conference.
And asking for the details, right, at the conference.
Absolutely. Maybe we can get an advanced copy before or right after it, either right before or right after it goes to publishing, so we can have him on the show and we can talk about that.
All right, now officially shut up.
Well, hey, I appreciate the information. I think we all do, Larry. Dave, we're wrapping up the information about the conference, but you know, the conference is 26 days away, so we need that final push for people to either show up in person or on Zoom. Speaking of, let me throw this out there. It never fails between Eventbrite and Zoom, and I've gone back and forth with both tech departments, and I'm in tech. And I've explained to him, I said, there's no reason why I can get people to show up the first day, but when they click on a link for, you know, Friday and Saturday, the damn link doesn't work. So I'm not counting on Eventbrite or Zoom. I'm doing it a whole different way. It's going to be hosted on Zoom. The tickets are sold through Eventbrite. But what happens if you sign up for Zoom, you will not get the, you know, standard, hey, here's your information from Eventbrite. You're going to get an email directly from me, from projectjfk@yahoo.com. It is going to have the link for each day. It's going to have the meeting ID and the passcode. So if you can't get in with the link, you'll be able to get in with join a meeting, click in the meeting ID and passcode. It's going to be the same for all 3 days. But, you know, right before the conference, the week before the conference, you're going to receive an email directly from me with all of the Zoom details. So for those of you that have signed up, are seeing this, or will sign up after seeing this, your link to get into Zoom will come directly from projectjfk@yahoo.com. So be on the lookout for that email. If you don't see us in your main inbox, check your spam folder. So that way there's nobody missing out on signing in to the meeting or to the conference on time. So I just want to make sure that we're trying to, again, create a good product and have goodwill with our attendees. I don't want anybody missing out on a speaker or missing out on time. So, yeah, we'll see how that works out this time. I think it'll definitely be – it's a little more work for me, but it's worth it to make sure that you are able to view what you pay for and to view our conference. All right, we're going to turn gears here, and I am going to call out on Mr. Larry Rivera. Larry is going to be one of our speakers at the conference. He's always one of our top guys here on the Journey meeting. I wanted to give a quick share on the fact that he is doing exceptional work with his Blender model. Not just Blender, he does research on several facets of the JFK assassination research. But I want to tell you guys, I've seen some animations, I've seen some photographs, screenshots, and I'm telling you, phenomenal information. And really taking his work, he's taken his work and he's expanded on it tenfold. So, Larry, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you and give us some new details. Tell us what you've been up to. Show us what you've been up to. Hold on, you're still muted, Larry. Unmute. Hey, Larry, pause. You're muted. You got to unmute your mic, Larry.
Got it.
There you go.
On this Markham thing, before we leave that topic, there's a very interesting document that Armstrong dug up precisely about James Markham, you know, that everything, that topic that you were just talking about. And I'll, as soon as I can, I'll put that document there. It's very interesting. Also, if you saw The Men Who Killed Kennedy, there's an interview with Helen Markham there. You know? And in that interview, she said, I closed my eyes. You know? So, anyway, I thought that was, yeah. Okay, so... obviously, you're talking about the Blender project that I've been working on for probably now 7 to 8 years. And previously, we have been able to give you a model composition of Dealey Plaza. And, you know, we've been moving on that, you know, through different periods of development. And at the time, you know, I was only able to give you screenshots, you know, and renderings, you know, still renderings. And last time we started to do a little bit about the animations. And now the way that it's progressed now, I've been able to fill out the rest
of the main buildings that are there, and I'll take the I need the screen here. David, are you there? Yeah, I need the screen.
Okay, yeah, give me just a quick sec. Let's see. Okay, now try it.
Okay.
There you go.
You there? Are we there? Can you see that?
Yep, we can see it.
Okay. This is the old Red Courthouse, okay, that we had still not been able to model. Number one, because there are no blueprints. recently talking to another researcher who told me that this particular building was built in 1893. Okay. Now, what struck me about this building was the incredible amount of windows in this old building, you know, and how easy it would have been to just, you know, shoot JFK coming up, coming down Main Street, or as he was immediately turning onto Houston. Okay, and this is taken about a month, and if I were to, for example, just give you an idea, you know, how modular this is, for example, the different components, which in this model, which is a precursor, I need to keep these all separate for the time being before, you know, as you can see, for example, in working in Blender, you don't just go and model each one of those windows separately, you know. You model one, and then you duplicate it. For example, on this tower here, if I were to duplicate it, I would just go do a Shift-D and move it along on the X-axis here. And I have a virtual copy of that tower, you know. And from there, I can just keep duplicating and filling out the building, you know. So this is something that's never been done before. Again, you know, in order to get this going, I had to actually work with a couple of only two reference images, you know, this one. And this one that I'm going to show you right here, which shows the roof of the building, okay? It's a very intricate building where you see how these roofs, you know, intersect each other, okay? Very, very interesting architecture of the time. I'm not an architect or anything like that, but I don't know if that's sort of Art Deco or whatever, you know, whoever knows anything about that. But, you know, but this is all that, you know, we're able to work with. You know, this cupola, you know, is still in progress. As you can see, it still extends, you know, upwards, and it's crowned by this, you know, sort of like arched thing there, I guess, you know, roof there. And for our purpose, you know, it's, you know, it's perfect. So I'm just going to get out of here and show you the application, right? And let me just go ahead.
What?
Dime.
Yeah, while you're bringing this up, Larry, the stuff that he's showing, sometimes we see, like, just the black and white or the mesh, and now, you know, he's got the renderings of, like you're seeing here on the screen, you know, in color, and then he's also been able to animate the limo. So, go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, okay. So, and obviously now, where does that particular model fit in our composition? Well, right there at the intersection of Main and Houston, right in front of the Sheriff's Department building, okay. And as you can see, so many windows and So, like I have been reporting, you know, before on these Blender compositions about the many cameras that exist in the composition, and we're able to animate, okay, to animate, for example, the limo, the two limos in this case, and where we've now progressed to the point where we have, for example, the flags are waving, the wigwag lights are going back and forth, the wheels are turning, okay, and all these are functions of Blender, you know, that that you can introduce into your model, into your composition, you know. And it follows the path of Elm Street as the as it comes down here. Now, at the bottom here, I'm just going to show you here. At the bottom, we have what's called a timeline, okay? It goes from one frame, and here, in order to do what I'm trying to do, I started at 600 frames, but now I've cut it down to 570. Move over here, and so right here 570, you can see on the lower right hand, and I'm just going to go ahead and run this animation real quick, and let me turn off the gizmos, and I'll just stop real quick there, stop there. As you can see here, if I zoom in on JFK, he's the only human that I have in the composition at this moment. And he's there, okay? And that's what happens to him. Now, I've programmed a 6-second limo stop because I am a firm believer in the Nukem tapes. And the JFK horsemen who were interviewed by Fred Nukem, and that information that had been sitting around for decades and decades, and now we've been able to listen to what they are saying, you know, from the grave. And this is what actually is more, it's closer to what really happened there on Elm Street. And that's why this Blender project is so important, because now, and I've said it so many times before, we can do comparisons, you know, between what the Z film shows and what Blender shows, okay? And as I have mentioned before, the reference images for this composition have been the Cutler maps and a couple of the Z frames, in particular the 255 and the Austin 6, which we have been able to use to accommodate, to position the different objects where they need to be. Okay.
I want to throw out a major importance, Larry. You know, whether you are on the side, there always seems to be two sides to a coin, but whether you're on the side that the Z film was not altered or the Z film was altered, one of the key aspects of Larry's Blender model is the fact of, you know, what we see in the Zapruder film compared to what eyewitness testimony, the motorcycle cops, did the limo stop, did it not stop, how long did it stop. By taking their information, it's not recreating history, okay? It's not recreating the Z film. What it is doing is it's giving you a different perspective, a different look. Back me if I'm wrong on this, Larry, but it gives you the opportunity. I mean, are we missing frames in the Z film? You know, was there a splice because, you know, we knew there was other things going on by what the eyewitnesses said that they witnessed, you know. So by Larry doing what he's doing, he's not adulterating history, okay? He's not adulterating the Z film. What he's doing is he's actually giving you another look at, you know, the model, the motion, the animation of going, okay, why don't we see that in the Z film? But we have eyewitness testimony that is putting that out there, that that's what they noticed, that's what they saw.
Right. This is, for example, the much more angle. Okay, remember before I just gave you a picture, now I'm giving you the entire animation based on much more, all right? And in this case, the much more camera is following the JFK limo all the way through, okay? And let's let it just, okay? And as you can see, even, you know, the effect of wheels seem to be turning backwards, you know, sometimes, and we even get that here. You know, which is what's so amazing here. And
another thing I find fascinating about this is when you're looking at the Much More film, the Z film, or any of the films, the Knicks film, your brain is concentrating on everything all at once. So you're looking at people, you're looking at the cars, you're looking at everything. What's nice about this is it's making you just only have to concentrate on in this instance of rendering, it's what the car is doing, what JFK is doing. So it gives you an opportunity to not be so bothered. I don't want to say that in a bad way, but not bothered about what everything else is going on, but to concentrate and to see, it comes to camera angles, right, Larry? I mean, there's certain things that you're not going to see.
Yeah.
But in the model, in the animation, you're able to track and see what is going on because the vehicle didn't just stop when it got underneath the bridge. I mean, it's still moving. So you get a chance from this vantage point to see what we don't see in the films that were, you know, released.
Yeah, here's an interesting one, which happens to be the Knicks, okay? And people don't realize, and you have to find this in Gail's book. Okay, let me go back to the first frame with the limos up here at the top of Elm Street. And what we're going to do is now we're going to see this from the perspective of Nix, because believe it or not, Nix did not, he wasn't static, okay? He was moving. He was running across the infield there, and for some reason he wasn't even looking for his viewfinder if you read Gail's book, you know. And here's what he actually crossed, and that's what we show here. He crosses Main Street, okay, like this, and then he gets a little closer, and then he pans to the left, okay? And so just to give you an idea that camera is actually moving, so it has to be keyframed, you know, to move the way that we want it to, okay? So, you know, that's we still have to add in a lot of the other models, for example, the doorway, you know, Jackie, the Cuban, and the Umbrella Man that I have done before, you know, but actually I had to redo this entire Elm Street with the curbs and the sidewalk. Instead of creating five different objects, what I did, I just did one object and I just kept extruding and scaling and moving. So it's, for example, when you cast cement, just cast in one, you know, in one pour, you know, your columns and your walls and your floor and everything, you know. So sort of something like this, you know, so that I don't have any spaces later on that I have to fix, you know. For example, this, if I were to move, see, it's all one piece, okay. Now Elm Street is all one piece. And that's really, really improved the levels and the angles. And, for example, just keeping the wheels on the pavement, you know, all those are considerations, you know, because those cars are actually following a path, two paths, actually, that are programmed into the scene. And as like I said before, all of these triangles that you see are actual cameras. So, yeah, you know, we it's progressing, you know, and we'll keep working on it until, you know, we have I think we already have a viable product, you know, and it's very useful, you know, for many angles that have never been studied before that we have already used. You know, for example, the tripled underpass, you know, under, above, and whatever, you know. So it's continuing to improve.
Well, thank you, Larry. And guys, I mean, you know, compared to what's been out there, or you know, I'm sure you guys remember some of the things that were shown on PBS Nova, where it's just a mesh square outline. Larry has gone way above and beyond in the modeling in Blender to be able to, you know, to be able to see things that, you know, other researchers and even some of the mainstream media programming, or you may have seen on History, on the History Channel, his model is definitely way more advanced than what we've ever seen before. And the opportunity to make changes as needed, you know, to show other areas of, you know, like I say, the motorcycle cops, what they witnessed and what they, you know, talked about later on. You're not going to see that anyplace else. Another thing that I wanted to throw out there, Larry had this, you know, and this is, you know, a couple years ago, Larry had made the Harper fragment in Blender. And then obviously we know the story of the Harper fragment. It became lost. You know, I guess they just didn't have enough room to keep it in the archives. But thanks to Larry going into Blender and making a 3D model, you know, he made the mesh and the model, and then I took it the next step and 3D printed and made an actual physical fragment that you can hold in your hand. Definitely got Doug Horn's approval. Several other pathologists that I've spoke to and showed the model to. It is the, you know, thickness, size, closeness of anything that they've ever seen. We only had a few of those a couple years ago at the conference. For those of you that are attending the conference this year, I've spent about the last month working on doing more production of those. So those will be available for purchase at the conference if you want to have your own Harper fragments. And it's not in a morbid type of way or to make money off of it. It's one, paying for the time it took to materials to make it, the electricity that it costs to make the machine run, and also the time it took for Larry to make the model in the first place. So it's not a shock value morbid idea of, you know, selling a 3D model of it. It's the fact of, you know, you get an opportunity to see and hold in your hand what you never got a chance to other than what you saw in a 2D photograph, and that doesn't do it justice. So with Larry's help in doing the modeling and the base work, I would call it, we're getting things that, you know, thanks to the technology that we have today, we just didn't have back then.
Of course, the important thing here, David, is that we give the model depth and thickness and curvature that obviously the deception of the FBI photographs and the Warren Commission, you know, do not tell you, you know, with those ridiculous flat photos, and that's why this is so important.
Yeah, and Scott brought up a very good thing in the comment section. It says, on earlier presentations, you've shown examples of the many cameras you've included as one of them from the perspective of Kennedy, that would be interesting to see what he was seeing. So, Larry, have you, I don't remember, but have you put a camera in the perspective of, you know, JFK to,
Yeah. That's the dash cam. Yeah. We've done that.
Yeah. I thought you had done that. I just wanted to answer Scott's question there. So
Yeah. I sent it to Casey and you, I'd have to dig that one out, but yeah, we can put a camera in the toilet if you want.
I don't think we want to see that, but it, yeah, that's the nice thing about Blender is you can put a camera any place in the model, so that way you can see the different perspectives.
Yeah. Let me see it before we finish. I can dig that one up. I remember I sent it to you and Casey, but I have something here also that I wanted to show.
All right.
Get this back. Okay. Are we here? Okay. Here's the finished. Here's the finished product. The finished product with audio.
Well, finished up to the point you're at right now, right? Let me...
Yeah, with audio highlight.
Okay, we're not seeing the video playing just yet.
Oh, you're not?
No, I see your File Explorer. You might want to open it and then share screen.
Yeah, now. See it there?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and restart that.
Yeah. All right. It's pretty dramatic, obviously.
Well, another obvious part about it is this can be a teaching tool for for younger researchers than just strictly looking at the. I mean, obviously, we want them to see the videos that are available, but also to show the different camera angles and also the model in motion or even still shots. For the model. So this is a great teaching tool, guys.
Right, thank you.
All right, well, we are at 2:37. I said we are going to do a hard stop at 3 o'clock today, so I'm going to open up the next 22 minutes for some Q&A. I would love to go longer today, but I have an appointment I have to get to. So anybody have any questions for any of our speakers, our guests today, or do you have questions that you just want to ask that maybe something you're working on or what? We'll open up to live Q&A. So if you want to ask a question, just unmute your mic and ask away. And we'll see if we can do the best to answer your questions. Or if there's something that you're working on you want to add to it and let the group know, let us know. Bueller. All right. Well, I'm going to let's see here. I'm going to throw out some more information on. We'll touch on the conference again. Remember, signups are available. You can go to Eventbrite tab on Project JFK, sign up for your ticket that way, or you can also go to the JFK Historical Group website. The Eventbrite tab is the exact same no matter which site you go to. There are, matter of fact, let me pull that up. Give me just a quick sec. This might be great information to have. Okay, ticket prices for the conference. The conference packages with two lunches and the dinner banquet is $220. Of course, there's taxes and fees, just like if you were going through Ticketmaster. General admission conference and two lunches is $175. The dinner banquet with a keynote speaker, which is going to be Doug Horn, that's $50. The Zoom portion of the conference is $50, or the one-day pass for those locally in Dallas. If you just want to come in for one day, is $35. This does not, I want to make sure we put this out there, this does not include your price of your hotel costs. The hotel registration right now for the early sign-up, let's see what we've got here on the screen. Okay, room rates for the hotel is going to be for two double beds non-smoking is $120.36 or one king bed non-smoking $120.36. And you can also, if you want to book your hotel room and get this special rate, remember that the rates will, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Dave said when I talked to him on the phone, it was I want to say it was the 28th, which is only in 2 days. If I'm incorrect about that, Dave, let me know. But once the special rates go away, then it goes back up to full price. So if you want to get the discounted rate, you want to sign up for your hotel now. Scott, you got your hand up. Go ahead, buddy. Take it away. What would you like to ask?
Since it's come up a couple times, I did read that article in Garrison, the Markham article that's been mentioned.
Okay.
And I would assess it to have been very well researched, detailed, and worthy of consideration. Some of the points that are made in there is that law enforcement and others use threats of violence and putting her sons away in order to get at her. And one instance was one of the sons happened to fall out of a window, which happens to us every day. And one of the curious points made in this article was that the sons were part, as the article states, the sons were part of a gang that would go around and do breaking and enterings and petty robbery, that kind of thing. One of the claims in this, and this is the part that maybe goes over the edge a bit for me, was that Lee Harvey Oswald was also part of that same gang. And I say that reservations because there's been no other instance where he's been said to be part of anything, let alone something of that nature. Now, that doesn't mean it isn't possible, because he was always lacking in money, and perhaps that was a way to do it. But it's definitely worth reading, and as was mentioned, you know, if there's any truth to it, it certainly has the chance of changing the story in an important fashion. I happen to see the notation about putting it in the chat, but you know, like your event coming up, it's a concern where people are looking to have that publication stay afloat, so giving it away probably wouldn't be the best thing to do, and it's worthy of buying the e-version of it, if not only for that article.
Yeah, and obviously, Scott, I mean, there's obviously copyright issues, and we want to support SP.
Right.
He's done an incredible job the last few years of bringing a magazine out that I remember getting the Third and Fourth Decades magazines back way back when I first started in this, and I missed those when they went away, and we hadn't really had a publication like Garrison or the Third and Fourth Decades in quite a few years, and I got to commend and say that ST has done one hell of a job bringing in a publication, made it available in two formats, whether it's in print or the e-version. You know, you can get the e-version, and you can read it on your tablet, your phone, your laptop. You know, it's a great way of and a lot of the researchers and people that are writing the articles are the ones that are, you know, those are the ones you'll find at the conference here on Zoom in our meetings. You know, everybody has their area of expertise. That's the nice thing about the JFK research community is, you know, not all of us know everything, but each of us know something. And it's like going to a doctor. You've got, you know, you may be referred to a specialist. Well, when it comes to this research group and this community, we are specialists in our certain areas. And, you know, this article that was written by the researcher, I'm sorry, I keep forgetting his name. I don't have it written down. But, you know, this is his way of, you know, this is his area of expertise of writing the articles. So, you know, definitely support it if you haven't read it. If you've never picked up a copy of Garrison Magazine at all, start reading it, because there's a lot of great information in there that you're not going to find other places. It's got great text, format, and tons of photographs and diagrams, documents PowerPoint slides that are put in there. I know that I've been in the magazine a couple times. I love the way that he puts the magazine together. So again, lulupress.com. You can search it up by St. Patrick, Midnight Rider News, or Garrison. If you type in Garrison, it's a little harder to find that way, but if you type in St. Patrick or Midnight Rider News, it's a lot easier to find on the website.
And Rider is WRITR, not RIDIER.
Right. Yeah.
And I have no connection to the publication, but I'll point out that unlike third and fourth decade, it's not solely devoted to one subject like the JFK assassination. It
right.
delves into a lot of other subjects that people like us might find interesting.
Absolutely. I'm actually going to pull up the website here real quick and do a screen share. And some people may be asking, well, how much does it cost to get this magazine? Well, that way I can give you and certain magazines cost different amounts. It depends on how much page count they are. But let me pull this up real quick. All right, so you can go. I just typed in Midnight Rider News. You can find here like where it'll say paperback or ebook. Paperback copy. Let's just for instance number one. It was $17.99 for the hard copy book, or you could get into a PDF version for usually around $10. But there's I don't think how many issues there's been now. I think there's been 17 issues. I don't think 18's come out yet. So, again, you can get the print copy or you can get the PDFs, or the eBooks. But yeah, definitely give it a shot. Like Scott said, yeah, there's things in here. I know I've read about, Watergate or, the vaccine stuff in a few issues ago, or 9/11. There's great information, and it's not strictly just about JFK. So for the history buffs, this is a perfect place to get information and to read articles that is in the publication. So
the Oklahoma City articles have been particularly interesting and valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I like that series.
David, I just got the dash cam queued up. If just give me a couple of minutes, just a second here to show it.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Larry. We've got about 12 minutes left before we got to close for the day.
Okay, there it is.
There you go, Scott. So that's the dash cam of looking from the limousine out to what he would have saw. And a good phenomenal putting the model together, Larry. I can't personally thank you enough. I know that eventually I talked to Larry the other day, and I'm hoping that we can get like a static, STL file, and I'm going to try my best.
Oh, yeah, right, to do a model. Notice here where we – I just wanted to point out the storm drain as it approaches here, and the angle is just perfect right there. Boom. Right towards the right. If you look closely here after Newman on the right here, that's Bill Newman. Right before the lamppost, there's your storm drain. Got it.
Yeah, I a few years ago, I did a commercial for JFK Custom Tours for Robin Brown, and he has a it's not a stretched convertible Lincoln Continental, or it's not the X100 exactly. It's a shorter version. There's an extra set of seats that's not in there, but I did a video that you can find on the website under the videos tab, and I did several different perspectives inside the Dealey Plaza in and around it, and then I got in the car with the camera in the seat that would have been where JFK, so you could see a video of what it looks like today, or actually a couple years ago. But if you wanted to kind of see that. I'll say one thing, it was eerie as hell. I mean, the hair on the back of my neck stood up just, driving through Dealey Plaza in that car, especially when we rounded Elm Street going down it. But if you want to see that, there's a side-by-side comparison portion of the video. And I also did a reenactment of what Ed Hoffman would have seen
That's the one that's compelling.
Well, and nobody, I'll admit, I mean, nobody has actually ever, nobody's ever actually recreated, you know, Ed Hoffman's perspective, which I find odd over the years that it's been, but I'm sitting there going, nobody's ever went over there and did a reenactment of it. It really speaks to, you know, to seeing the side-by-side comparison. And like I say, you can see it on, I'm going through the website just to make sure. Yeah, I know I put the video up there. Just let me make sure that it's, yeah, there it is. It's on the events tab, and it's learn more about JFK Custom Tours.
JFK Custom Tours.
But what was nice about this is it's got perspectives of you know, different areas in Dealey Plaza, and then it gives you a side by side that you'll see here of what it would have been in on the right. It's what you kind of have to see the video twice because your vision's going to go on one side. You know, whether it's the inside the car or the outside the car, but it gives you an opportunity to kind of be in his position, in his area of looking around what was going on. Obviously, this was not 1963. I think this was about maybe 7 or 8 years ago when I made this video for Robin, it gets up to, let me see here, I'll just forward the video. Yeah. The bald guy inside, that's actually Brian, that's not me. I'm doing the filming. But you'll see the car come out from the bridge and getting onto Simmons Freeway, and it's gonna show you what Ed Hoffman. They, you know, he said that he could look down right in the limousine and see, the carnage in the car and the wound on President Kennedy. Well, they came out and said, oh, it's been debunked. There's no way that he could have looked down there and seen it. This is from Ed Hoffman's perspective right here. He had a perfect viewpoint to look down in that limousine as it was speeding away to Parkland Hospital. So, again, if you want to watch it in full detail, go to the website and, watch it a few times. And you'll be able to see, like I say, areas that were filmed around there for the commercial. And then the highlight is, sitting inside the car and seeing the viewpoint from JFK. If I would have had an opportunity to, sit in different areas of the car, I would have loved to have done that, but we were already filming for about 4 hours of just that, car going around and around and around Dealey Plaza. And I'll admit that day, the brakes were shot on that car. So it was a little nerve wracking, when the brakes got applied. I think we were down to just bare metal. There wasn't anything left of the damn brake pads or the shoes, I guess you would say back then. But, all right, I'm going to go ahead and bring the meeting to a close. It's almost 3 o'clock and I've got an appointment to get to. I will tell you guys that, we will have another meeting. It'll be in 2 weeks. The sign up will happen, today, evening time. So you'll get an email, either tonight or tomorrow morning. And it looks like we're going to be doing the next journey meeting on November the 9th at 1:00 PM. Central Standard Time at that point, because don't forget, November 3rd is when we set the clocks back, so you gain that extra hour of sleep. But other than that, I want to thank everybody for showing up today, supporting not only Project JFK, CSI Dallas, but also the JFK Historical Group. Be sure to like us on YouTube. And we like to grow our subscription base on that. It doesn't cost anything, but if you want to watch replays of our video, you'll find them on YouTube. You'll find them on our website. You can always find the videos directly from the website, and it'll transport you to our YouTube channel in case you can't find us by just typing in Project JFK. But we've got a much bigger footprint on there now over the last 3 years we've been doing this, or actually it could be almost 4 years we've been doing this. So other than that, if you guys like what we're doing, be sure to, if you can, if you can't, that's fine too. But if you can, make a donation on the PayPal tab for either our website or for the JFK Historical Group, or hell, even both. It helps keep the groups running and the lights on and the conferences going. So again, we will see you in 2 weeks. And please be sure to, if you haven't signed up for the conference and you want to sign up, definitely want to get you to do that. And make sure that if you are going to come in person, do not get locked out of the hotel rate, because the rates will go up considerably compared to what is on our website with the discounted room packages. So other than that, you guys have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Hold on, David. Don't somebody asked me to put that storm drain video. Do I have a chance to do that here in the chat?
Real quick, Larry. Go ahead.
Find it. Sorry, but I'm at work, and you know how it is. Oops, not letting me. Is it possible to copy paste here? It's not letting me put any type of.
Is it a video or is it a photograph, Larry?
Yeah, it's a short video.
It's probably too big.
Okay.
You find it?
No, admin restriction. No, it's okay.
Okay, well, if nothing else, when we meet back in 2 weeks, you'll have time to get it queued up in that time, and we can show it at our next journey meeting.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you in 2 weeks. Bye.